Hey, this is WTOP's Jason Fraley, and we are being joined by, just say your name and your role with the show.
Hi, everybody. I'm Isabel Ariza, and I play Portia on The Merchant of Venice.
Yes, and it's going to be at Shakespeare Theater Company now through April 24th. I believe it just got extended, so more time to see it. Let's start by just reminding our listeners, and you know, in case they never read it in school or never seen a show, hard to believe, but just remind them what, you know, the basic setup, the basic premise of Merchant of Venice.
Well, there are two storylines in Merchant of Venice. One of them is happening in Venice, which is Bassanio, our lead guy, or one of our lead men, needs his friend to get him some money so he can woo Portia, this heiress who is in Belmont, and who has been, you know, left with this task of basically marrying a man that could discover the right casket. Her father left that in the will. She cannot marry anyone until there's a suitor that comes and finds the right casket. And so Bassanio wants to go impress Portia. He asks his friend to, you know, give him some money, and they have to go to the moneylender Shylock. And Shylock and Antonio, who is Bassanio's friend who will lend the money, they have history together, and it's not the nicest one. So they decide to, you know, create this bond in which Antonio, who will lend the money for Bassanio, to Bassanio, does not fulfill the contract in a period of 3 months. Shylock then will be able to have a pound of his flesh. And so they decide to sign on that. And lo and behold, Antonio breaks the contract, has no money to repay Shylock, and everything kind of ensues from there.
Nice. Thanks for that quick roundup. A refresher if people hadn't seen it in a while. Well, very cool. Well, tell me about the role that you get to play, Portia. Why is that such a, you know, a rewarding, you know, interesting, intricate role?
Well, Portia is one of those characters in Shakespeare's canon, you know, female characters that it's like so witty, so rich, so complicated. I mean, this character has, I believe, close to the same amount of lines as Hamlet. So it's one of those Shakespearean, you know, leading roles that I think every person wants to play. You know, and in this version, we decided to kind of do an exploration of Portia that is quite unconventional, right? I believe this character is mostly always played kind of this heroic, you know, virtuous, bright young woman. And I believe she's all those things. But in our version, there's not a happy ending. And I think that's a much more compelling way of telling the story. And so rather than having this like leading lady who's a hero, she kind of is a hero in this one, but it's a coming of age of her story of becoming, you know, an unschooled, unlessoned girl. Her lines, or Shakespeare's lines, not mine, to, you know, this woman who realizes that the world could be a very cruel and scary place.
Gotcha. Well, that's cool. I like what, you know, how they mixed it up a little bit. It's like more of a coming of age look at it. Yeah. Well, very cool. Well, in what other ways has it changed or been updated for the times? You know, sometimes they'll take these classic plays and people will ding them left and right for a line here or there about certain things that seem outdated. But you've really turned Merchant of Venice into a timely thing, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I, you know, what's interesting is we had an audience member back in New York who thought that we had kind of edited the whole text so it would fit our version. And what's interesting, it's actually, we just kind of took away certain lines because they were long. For example, like Portia scenes when she's being wooed by all these suitors. So it was like very superficial editing. Like we didn't really kind of did a lot to it. And what's interesting is like a lot of it reads, it's the original text. And so what's fascinating is that Aaron Arbus, our director, had kind of this brilliant take on it, in which we get to explore the ugliness of all these characters, including Shylock, including Portia, and kind of, I believe, I can't see this play being done in 2022 in a different way. That's what's so interesting. Like, to me, it would not stand to do, you know, a Merchant of Venice that ends up being a happy ending. I just cannot see it sustained, I believe, in this day and age. And so what's interesting is, like, it's the exploration of who the system's for, who does it benefit, how do we bend the law, how is our, you know, it's almost like, how do we end up in this chaos, like in real, you know, in our real day and age? And I find that to be very compelling and powerful, to be honest.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And tell me about some of the themes it tackles, because I know the Shakespeare Theater, at least the way they're setting it up on the website, is saying, in a city steeped in anti-Semitism and racism, misogyny, homophobia, and they call it Shakespeare's incendiary play, exposes all this stuff. Talk about some of the themes tackled in here.
Well, you just mentioned them all. I mean,
I can't use the sound bite. If I just in my voice.
Yeah, I mean, we explore, yes, like obviously anti-Semitism and racism and homophobia and misogyny. I mean, all of these characters are somehow victims of the system, and because of that, also perpetuate that kind of violence, right? And without giving too much away, there is a decision that was made about Bassanio and Antonio's relationship and Bassanio's relationship to Portia, that you also then understand why, kind of the ripple effects of, you know, why things end up being the way things are. And so in the way that Christians are violent to Shylock, you know, this is a world that is also violent to women and so forth. And somehow then Portia being, you know, a victim of this also then perpetuates violence. And it's just like this never ending cycle of violence, you know, violence begets more violence. And I would say that those are so many of the themes that we do cover in this production.
Very cool. Well, that's a lot about the themes and the story. Tell me about how it's all visualized though, you know, on stage, if our audience comes to Shakespeare Theater Company and they're looking up on stage, you know, paint us a visual picture here for the radio about, you know, the sets, costumes, is it like period costumes? Is it modern looking, or what do we see?
Yeah. Well, think of Succession. You've seen that show, or the world of Billions, you know, of like really wealthy, wealthy, wealthy contemporary, you know, outfits, costumes, attires. It's that kind of, it's our world. It's actually set in the near future. So we're talking about like 5 years from now, which we believe will look like our world. Or maybe not. I mean, with the advances that we've had in technology. But I remember the director saying that the first day of rehearsal, like, this is set in, you know, 2025, 2027. And it's our world. And at the same time, there are very specific rules to this world. And I think the audience will come and see that. And I think it's kind of like a hodgepodge of, you know, the play that Shakespeare wrote, and then our own rules that we kind of made up for our, sustained by the text, by the way, for our production. And it's like set in this beautiful brutalist architecture, right? So there's not a lot to the set. It's just like almost this temple like, you know, stage, and which is huge, by the way. And it's the contrast of it all, you know, these outfits, these costumes in this brutalist temple-like architecture. It's very interesting and compelling. And it's just us, the stage and the language, kind of there creating the world.
Great. Well, you covered the stage and the language. Let's talk about the us, which is who is in this. Tell me about your Shylock. Tell me about we got a Tony nominee who you've seen it on TV and a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, we are in the presence of the great John Douglas Thompson, and who, you know, has been lauded by critics as one of the best, you know, Shakespearean actors of the 21st century. I mean, it's just an honor and a masterclass, I will say that, in both his performance and also as a leader of the group. And he's one of the most generous people I've ever met in my life. So it's been a true joy and just it's just incredible to watch. And it's so moving. You know, I'm backstage whenever he's on, we share only one scene, but it's like the biggest scene of the play, which is the trial scene. And so I'm backstage, obviously, for most of the times that he's on stage. And I just can't help but like listen. I mean, it's so good. He's so moving. And we have a big company of incredible actors as well, by the way. The list is very long. I can tell you all their names, but they are also just impeccable. The thing that I really enjoy the most is that everyone feels to be kind of on the same page when it comes to acting. And also as a group, you know, it's a very solid cast, both on stage and off stage. It's been a gift to work with all these people, honestly.
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. And, we mentioned that he was a Tony nominee, but I want to tell everyone what it was for. It was, I believe, for Jitney, wasn't it?
Jitney. Yeah, yes. Yeah.
But we've seen him in, he was on in Mayor of Easttown. He's yeah. been in all over stage and screen. So, well, just like yourself, remind our listeners, I mean, this is, how often do you get to do work on stage? Because we'll remember you from, you know, movies like The Little Things and all kinds of stuff. But do you like the flexibility to be able to go back and forth between the two mediums?
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't had the chance to do so. I graduated from acting school 2017, and I did actually my first and only play after graduating with John Douglas Thompson. And I had three lines, and it was Julius Caesar's Shakespeare in the Park 2017. It was a very controversial staging of that. And we kind of sparked a global conversation there because it was the staging of, you know, a very contemporary Julius Caesar. And it was based on, you know, our American government at the time. So it was just very, very intense, the whole experience. And after that, I just like continued doing camera work. And, you know, I'm just so grateful because I am a trained actor, you know, trained for the stage, and I hadn't really had the opportunity to kind of like work those muscles. So it was just like a great gift to come back to the stage after many years, you know, alongside John Douglas Thompson. I mean, it was it's just been a great gift, as I've mentioned before. My dream is that I can go back and forth from camera work to on stage work, because being on stage does make me feel like an artist, you know, and it's just like such a different way of storytelling. Not that I don't like camera work. I love both, but they're just kind of different, you know, very different venues. And there's just like a different way of sharing a story. And so, you know, I did the camera thing for a while there. And I believe, you know, after the show, I'll go back to camera work for a while, but it's just a great gift to go back and forth, you know, and just feel like I can stretch those muscles and kind of do my own thing that I was trained to do, and then go back to camera. Cause I just feel like a better actor when I do, you know, when I go back to camera, having the opportunity of play such a wonderful role and just be in the company of other wonderful actors.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, it keeps the chop sharp to be going back and forth, I think, and trying the different texts and the different mediums. It's a great outlet. Well, if you have a second, I'd love to, before we run, remind our listeners some of the great screen roles, I mean, that we're talking about. Remind us, tell me about what it was like working with Jason Sudeikis on Driven.
Oh my God, Jason. He's so nice. He is so generous. We actually worked on that before Ted Lasso. So it's like, so, I mean, he always had a wonderful career, but I feel like it's taken off in a way that's just like so impressive. And I'm so happy for him. He was great, but I always kind of knew in him that he had this like thing to be a director. You know what I mean? It was like my first film. I had no idea what I was doing. And yeah, I didn't even know what like a mark was, which for the listeners that don't know, like I did at the time, it's the sticker that they put, you know, it's a little sticker that they put on the floor so you can, you know where to land when you're doing on camera work. And it was just like, I didn't know like the most basic things about on camera work. And he was there. He kind of had my back. He was like, hey, you're supposed to like hit your target, say your line, and act at the same time if you didn't know. And I was like, oh, I had no idea. Thank you. So like, he was there. It was just a great experience overall, and I'm just so happy for his success.
Oh yeah. And then if I can, I'm just gonna jump around and pick some at random here. So American Dreamer with Jim Gaffigan, what was it? I mean, you worked with Sudeikis, who had a comedy career, and Gaffigan's a comedy career, but then you're jumping in and doing watching them, you know, stretch their stuff in other genres. Like, you're getting to watch Jim Gaffigan do a crime thriller.
Oh my god. You know what's so funny about working with these comedians is that they some of them can't turn it off. And Jim was one of those people. And I mean that in like the best sense. Like, no one makes me laugh like Jim does, you know, both like when I see his like comedy specials, but also like him in real life. What was so fascinating to me was like, he could like crack jokes nonstop. And then they would say action, and he can like turn that sociopath thing on to play this like very scary character and just be so good at it. And I told him, I was like, that's kind of terrifying, you know. like, you know, some of us need like a few seconds before someone screams action to kind of like, you know, focus and zero in on what I'm doing. But Jim was just like right there, turn of the dime, he was just like on and terrifying and just so great. And so it was also a wonderful experience to work with him. And that in particular was such a terrifying film, and just so dark. And so it was important to be surrounded by people that were also supportive and just so kind. And Jim was also definitely one of those people.
For sure. Well, we can't end the interview without talking about The Little Things. I thought a very underrated crime thriller, serial killer type of movie. Well, I mean, just what was it like being, you know, sharing the screen with, I mean, you had three Oscar winners. You had Denzel, you had Rami Malek, you had Jared Leto. I mean, man, and Leto was terrifying, but you know, just talk about working, you know, being in surrounded by just three Oscar winners.
It was surreal. I'm not gonna lie. You know, it's like my first big, you know, studio film, and Rami couldn't have been nicer. I mean, we just had great chemistry on and off camera. Another example of just extreme generosity, and made me feel so comfortable. You know, I thought I was gonna be like, I guess like, you know, like so shocked just to be in the presence of all of them. But what was interesting was that Rami was so open and so nice and generous and just so kind that I just felt so comfortable and right at home, which was important for me just to, you know, perform and say my lines. And Denzel has just a presence bigger than life, you know, just bigger than life. And it was just another example of a masterclass. See him, how he just goes through the text, is open to these experiences on camera, just like, he's just open, you know what I mean? And he's so natural. I was just like, I cannot believe that I'm like watching this man perform in front of me, but also the way he did it was just like, wow. Of course you're like the actor of the 21st century. So it was just beautiful to be there. I never met Jared, by the way. You know, we're in the same movie, but
scenes are pretty much separate.
Yeah. So I never got to meet him, but he definitely just gave an incredible performance in that film. He was so terrifying. So great. So it was just a wonderful experience for me. And it just made me so happy to be there with those A-listers. And they made me feel so comfortable. So it was just a great experience.
Great. Well, thanks for, you know, the walk down, you know, movie memory lane there. And what should we tease else that's coming up? I mean, I guess you got that new Amazon Prime series, Outer Range, coming up. Josh Brolin and Imogen Poots. And that's going to be a star-studded one, too. So, tease that real quick. Or tell us what it was like working with Brolin and the like.
Oh, my God, Josh, he's the best. Yes, we have this new Prime Video original show that's hitting the screens on April 15th. And it's called Out of Range. It's a Western. I'm trying to describe it. I have, you know, all these like press conferences this week for the show, and I'm still having a hard time kind of like just summarizing what the show's about and what the show is. But I guess if we had to define it, it's a Western metaphysical thriller drama starring Josh Brolin, Lily Taylor, Imogen Poots, Noah Reed, Tom Puffer. I mean, it's just like a phenomenal star-studded show. I play Maria Olivares. You know, she is the girlfriend or becomes the girlfriend of one of the lead guys, played by Lewis Pullman. It's a really, really cool show. And it's, let me repeat that, Amazon Prime Video, April 15th. Very excited for this one. I think it's going to be so cool.
Yes, April 15th on Prime. So, first, everyone come see live in person Shakespeare at Shakespeare Theater. Come out to The Merchant of Venice, the Shakespeare classic. Why should they come out? Final seconds, you know, if they've heard this whole interview, you know, what, speak directly to our listeners and say, hey guys, come on out to Merchant of Venice.
Come on out, Merchant of Venice, if you want to have, you know, a reminder of why, you know, live theater is so important and you want to be shaken to your core.
Perfect. Hey, that, if that doesn't get him out, I don't know what does. Hey, thanks so much. Thanks so much for joining us. It was really cool getting to, you know, go through your film credits and your TV credits. And this has been a blast.
Thank you, Jason. Thank you for having me. I had such a great time.
All right. Good luck with the show.
Thanks.